For all you folks who may be traveling through big, wonderful Wyoming or even you seasoned Wyomingites, Hatch's Hallmark offers many beautiful ways to remember this proud, wide-open land of ours. Sageland candles to scent your life with sweetness. Salt and pepper shakers, Wyoming decorative plates, cups, saucers, mugs, Western cards, Indian dolls, Western lamp kits to make your own thing yourself, Western calendars to keep track of important occasions, and many, many other gift items. They're just the right thing to give someone you care about or to give yourself. Hatch's Hallmark has it all. So if you're just passing through, or if you live in Wyoming and you're proud of it, see Hatch's Hallmark. They've got a taste of the Old West just for you. Hatch's Hallmark, 109 East 2nd and the Beverly Plaza.
It's time for Free for All, your morning telephone discussion program from KATI. And a very pleasant good morning, everyone, and welcome to your morning telephone discussion program, Free for All. Pat Boone and family will be in concert next Tuesday night here in Casper at the T-Bird Gym at Casper College. There'll be two summer concerts at 5:30 p.m., the other at 9 p.m. Tickets are available at a number of locations, which we'll be talking about, and it's sponsored by Life Incorporated.
And we're speaking on the telephone live and direct from California with Mr. Pat Boone. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
It's certainly nice to have you take the time to talk with us on the program this morning. We appreciate it.
I can. I can hardly wait to get to Casper. I sound pretty disloyal for a guy that lives in California now, but a few times I've been in Wyoming, it's always been so gorgeous that I never wanted to leave, and so I'm anxious to bring my family back there.
What parts of Wyoming have you been in before?
Well, my most vivid recollections are the Cheyenne experience that I had with Arthur Godfrey when I came. Years ago, I was on the Arthur Godfrey show, and he came out. Seemed like to me there was a certain event.
Might have been Frontier Days or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I forget the name of it, but he brought his whole show out there, and I was just, I fell in love with it because I had all the young kids' romantic notions of the Old West, but it seemed like to me I found it in Cheyenne, and then we went to Jackson Hole. And I've never seen a more beautiful place in the world than that. And we had venison steak outdoors. And I'll never forget that we all ate as much as we could. And I ate more than I could. And yet there were still several plump venison steaks that this real old-timer cowboy type had cooked outdoors, and little bacon strips wrapped around them, and we had to just leave them because there was, you know, nobody could eat anymore. And I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night thinking about that those beautiful steaks that we left there and nobody ate.
Maybe we can have a venison steak waiting for you in Casper, huh?
Huh?
Maybe we can have a venison steak waiting for you in Casper Tuesday.
I don't know if I could take it. It just depends now. I haven't had anything like that in so long.
Well, of course, we mentioned and have been mentioning it's Pat Boone and family in concert, and we'd like you to tell the listeners, and we're having, I don't know if we have the best phone line in the world, we're having a little volume problem, I don't know if you can speak any louder or not, but we'll get by fine here.
Yeah, I will.
There you go. Could you give us a background on how you got the family involved with your concert tours?
Yeah, like most of the good things that are a part of my life, this just sort of happened. It wasn't my plan, it just happened. I was going to Japan about 5 years ago now. on a tour. It was going to be my fourth tour of Japan, and for some reason, I've always had a tremendous following and great reception in Japan. And so I thought, well, I'll take something a little different this time. I took a group of boys that I knew that had sung some on television here on Andy Williams' show called the Osmonds.
Sure.
And they weren't, you know, they weren't that well known in Japan, except that Andy Williams' show, some of them had been seen there. And I figured they'd be a good asset to my show in Japan. I thought, wait a minute, I'm taking George Osmond's kids. Why am I not taking my own? And so I loaded up my own girls. And surely, the girls were, of course, 5 years younger, and a couple of them just barely hitting their teens. And I knew that they sang here at home. We'd sung for fun, and we could struggle through a couple of numbers there on stage, so we did. And the Japanese audiences just absolutely flipped over this whole picture of two families. Well, we came back, and we had enjoyed it so much, and gotten to know the Osmonds well, and saw that they were very normal people, in spite of the fact that they, you know, were also very good entertainers. And it seemed to work out real well for their family togetherness. And I was going into a hotel in Las Vegas shortly after that, and the girls had enjoyed singing with me, and I loved having them with me. So I said, okay, any shows you feel like in Las Vegas, you know, you get up and we'll do there what we did in Japan. Well, they felt like it, two shows a night for 30 nights. And we never advertised it, but we broke the record at the hotel just sort of by word of mouth reaction to this family unit. And then that showed me, and it showed all of us, that there was something good about seeing a real family that really did love each other and could sing and entertain. And it was something more than entertainment. It seemed to reassure other people about their own families and the institution of the family, really. And so we started singing more together, and it just grew to the point now where, although I make some appearances during the year by myself, more often than not, the family's with me. And of course, in the summertime, we really put in almost three solid months of performing, and we've gotten very, very serious about it.
You just recently returned from an overseas tour, did you not?
Yeah, we were in Japan for a month. This was my seventh trip and the third trip over for the family. And this was bigger and better than ever. And of course, the girls now work a lot harder than they used to, and we allowed it rather than encouraged it, because they, although they don't look for a career, they're not planning on being professional singers on their own, they figure if they're going to be on stage and people are going to be paying to see them, that they want to really be their very best, they want to be good, they want to do a variety of music. And of course, more often now than not, too, in fact, I guess almost without exception, when we do a show of any kind for anybody, we also express in some way, at least musically, who we are and something about our faith and why we are together as a family and the sources of our happiness. So we feel good about that. The girls do, and that gives us an extra sort of an incentive to work hard and to be good at what we do.
Oftentimes, as you know, certainly probably better than anyone, fame, it seems, and morality work against each other, but that hasn't been the case with Pat Boone and family. You do have...
Well, because we've approached it as a family unit, with no one of us, including me. I mean, I've been a solo performer all my life, and I don't think any pop singer has ever done this, added his family to his own presentation. But each of us has to be keep remembering that we're part of a group, and if one of us gets sick or one of us falls down on the job or something, then everybody is affected. So it's been fabulous for our family, you know. I just never would have dreamed that I would have wanted to bring my four daughters into my work as an entertainer. My philosophy always was I would want to keep them out and give them as, quote, normal a life as possible, even just in school and with regular things in the neighborhood. But boy, the regular things in the neighborhood and the normal school life out here ain't what it used to be. And I really feel like it's been far better over the last several years for my teenage girls to be with me, traveling wherever I went, working with me, praying, all of us together, involved in the same thing, than having them back home involved in the things that most of their friends have become involved in.
And of course, your lovely wife, Shirley, is very, very involved with, I was going to say, obviously, the family, your lovely four daughters.
Yeah.
But kind of a storybook romance, really, as I look over the background on you and Shirley. You go back to college. She, of course, the daughter of Red Foley.
Yeah.
I interviewed him, by the way, a week before or so. He was in Casper for our fair, which is coming up next week. And quite a gentleman.
Wait a minute. You interviewed who?
Red Foley.
Oh, you did?
Yes, your late father-in-law. Let's see, I'm trying to, it was just a week or two before his tragic death.
Well, you wouldn't have a copy of that interview.
Yes, I sure do. I sure do, and I will, in fact, I have it at my house. It's one of a few interviews that I've saved, and I will make a copy for you and give it to you when we talk with you next Tuesday.
Oh, that would be a rich treasure. It really would. Yes, Shirley is Red's daughter and just inherited, I guess, a natural ability to sing, and we've always had to twist her arm to get her to do it. She never felt like she had the ability to get up in front of people and sing, and yet over and over and over people tell her how good that, you know, they feel she is, and even how her singing has a very strong emotional impact on them. It's hard to explain, and that's the Foley tradition, because boy, everywhere he sang, as you know, people were moved to tears. Sometimes it would mystify him. He wouldn't know why. He would think he hadn't sung very well, and never had a very high opinion of himself, but when he closed his eyes and sang, it really communicated to everybody in a deep way, you know. And that was Red Foley. And Shirley, just, I don't know, there's a lot of that that's been passed on to her, and we often do, maybe we should, in Casper, some of our favorite Red Foley songs.
That would be tremendous. I'm sure that people will enjoy it very much. What type of program or concert can we look forward to next Tuesday night?
Well, we will probably do what, I say probably because we are always sort of changing, shifting things around to last minute depending on the situation, but most likely we'll do a kind of program that we're doing everywhere, which is a combination of current kinds of songs and country things and my old records and a thing or two that I've recorded just recently. And the girls will do a pretty wide cross-section of types of music that they like, and they do it well. You know, they'll perhaps sing something by the Doobie Brothers and by this new group Manhattan Transfer, and then songs that they've just recorded themselves, because their own recording career seems to be growing. You know, they're on Motown.
Right.
And I'm on the country. I'm on Motown too, but on the country label, Melody Land, so that I'm doing more country songs these days than ever. Shirley and I will be doing something together. I don't know, it could be Paul Williams' You and Me Against the World, or it might be the old, great old song, True Love, or something like that. And then we'll team up for a medley of things together as a family, and I don't know which medley that'll be, but it's sort of dictated by a sponsor, Group Life, and what they like. And then I feel pretty sure we'll be doing some Red Foley songs and some songs that do communicate our faith and our relationship with God. And then I'm not quite sure how we'll wind it all up. I think we're going to add a young fellow named Greg Scheidler to the package. he's a young Christian boy who has a talent that I've just never run across anywhere else. He's he does vocal sound effects, and it's just so amazing. It's hard to describe. You have to hear it, but it never fails to just knock an audience out. And he's a fine young fella too. I just think he'll be a good addition to the show. I've introduced him on the Mike Douglas show and the Tonight Show, and the reaction's always been tremendous. So I may bring Greg along too.
Sounds tremendous.
Maybe, as you see, a real cross section, a real potpourri or mixture of all kinds of things, because we like to entertain anybody who comes, regardless of what his preference or taste might be, you know, and a thing for the whole family too.
What do you attribute the recent return to the 50s type music, the popularity of it?
Well, I think it's a lot more than just a yearning for the 50s music. I think that's just a little surface symptom, really, of a longing on the part of almost everybody for a return to a period that we can actually remember, most of us, when life seemed to be understandable, when we could grasp what was going on, when there was things were a little simpler and more dependable. That period during the 50s was a relatively peaceful and certain kind of a time, and the amusement and involved seemed simpler and little more harmless than a lot of things that are happening now. And even kids that didn't experience it or hardly remember it because they were little babies almost, do know that there was a time just recently when the music was simple and kids were interested in more harmless things and they sort of wish they could get back to that. And I think the music is just part of it.
When we talk about getting back, do you feel in traveling around the world, do you think the youth of today are returning to spiritual values as well?
A great number, yeah. I wish to goodness that I could see evidence that it was a universal or more complete thing, but it seems to me it's a yearning, a universal yearning on the part of people to get that vacuum inside of them filled up some way. But many are properly realizing that that's a spiritual vacuum and coming in awe to the God of the universe and saying, hey, I really think that what I'm looking for is my identity and relationship with you. And they're finding it. But unfortunately, there are millions of other young people, as you know probably, having read it or bumped into it, that are becoming alcoholics. They're still getting very, much involved with drugs and occult religions and all kinds of Eastern mysticism and weird far-out trips of that type. And it's all an evidence or a symptom of the same thing. It comes from the same inner hunger, and they know that something's got to fill that, but they don't all turn in the right direction, because you find out pretty quickly that if you want to be a child of God, that requires a commitment, and it might even change you or change your life or your direction. And not all kids these days are ready for that, although if they find out that it's real, then they're more willing to make a commitment, a change, even than their parents a lot of times, or older folks that have gotten established in a certain direction and don't want anybody to rock the boat too much. So the young people I see are hungry, and they're really looking for direction and for something worthy of their life commitment and dreams and hopes, but not everybody is finding it.
We're speaking on Free for All this morning with Mr. Pat Boone, and we'll continue with the program after this message.
Class 5 decided to make a down sleeping bag a little less sophisticated without sacrificing quality. They widened the baffles by 2 inches, made one draft flap instead of 2, and generally simplified the construction. Yet it's filled with 2 pounds of prime goose down to make it comfortable to 10 degrees above zero. In the generous mummy shape, the Nickel Cigar sleeping bag costs only $89. And other sleeping bags available at Cross Country Mountaineering are the Class 2 sleeper rated to 0 degrees for $110 and the Class 4 sleeper rated to minus 15 degrees for $130. Cross Country Mountaineering would also like to invite you to attend their free kayak clinic on July 23rd. Be sure to check into that if you're interested in learning about the exciting sport of kayaking. Cross Country Mountaineering is the little shop with the heart as big as all outdoors. They're at 128 West 2nd.
Program is free for all, and we're going to try and get a different line so maybe we can have more volume with Pat Boone, and he's going to call us right back. Pat Boone and family in concert at T-Bird Gym at 5:30 and at 9 o'clock next Tuesday night. Advance tickets, $3. There'll be 5 at the door. They're available at the Chamber, First National Bank, Les Parsons Music, Windy City Music, Rocky Mountain Sound, Sunshine Records, Christian Brothers Mobile Homes at God's Window, and at the Faith Bookshop. It's sponsored by Life Inc. here in Casper, a nonprofit organization. And we'll continue with our discussion with Mr. Pat Boone after this word.
When you're hungering for fish or chicken and the kids want burgers and fries, take them on down to the Red Barn for all this and more besides. You get a whole lot more of what you're hungering for at the Red Barn. It's the place to be for variety. It's the Red Barn.
Remember when you dreamed about working in an ice cream parlor with all those rich toppings, chopped nuts, and fruit sauces? Well, now you can have that dream and eat it, too. Now you can make your own sundae at the Red Barn with all the toppings you want to make the biggest, bestest, sweetest sundae you ever saw. So come on down to the Red Barn and make the sundae of your dreams.
You get a whole lot more of what you're hungering for at the Red Barn.
Two Red Barns in Casper at 711 East 2nd and 2711 CY.
Speaking with Pat Boone, we do have a better connection, Pat.
Good, yeah, I hear you a lot better.
Glad you called back. By the way, listeners, if you have a question, something that you'd be interested in asking Pat Boone, just call our regular number, 234-4545, and our receptionist will jot the question down and bring it in to me, and I'll ask it of Pat Boone. So if you have a question, something of interest to you, phone 234-4545, and make them short, of course, and sweet, and our gal will write them down and bring them in to me. Well, in addition to millions of records that you've sold, you have been very involved in the past with motion pictures,
mm-hmm.
TV shows,
yeah,
writing books. In fact, your wife wrote a book, One Woman's Liberation.
Yeah, she did. It's quietly a big bestseller. The quiet part is because she's with a relatively small publisher, a good publisher, but they're not one of the large ones that can do a lot of promotion, and yet in their own quiet, effective way, this book has really gotten around, and with maybe one or two exceptions, it's the best-selling book in the country right now, written by a woman. And yet, you don't see it on anybody's charts or anybody's best-selling list or anything, because it's considered a religious book, which neither Shirley or I really want to think about our books as being, because we're just sharing what's happened to us and not trying to, we're not spouting a theory or a doctrine or anything, and we don't think of these books as religious books. They're just our own experiences. But because the booksellers consider her book religious, then it doesn't count on the list of the bestsellers. So a book about stamps or cooking or dieting or militant liberation of some kind or astrology or any other thing will count. And if it had the same kind of sales that Shirley's book has had, it would be number one. But Shirley, being, as they considered, a religious book, it doesn't count. So the sales, you'd never know unless you happen to bump into a store, talk to somebody who's read it, which is happening more and more, that this is a very big best-selling book, and she really has some terrific things to say about the real liberation of a woman.
And again, it's entitled One Woman's Liberation.
Yeah.
Very good. You've written, what, three or four books?
I've written, believe it or not, eight books.
Eight books.
Some have become quite well-known, others haven't. The first one was Twixt 12 and 20, and that was a book for teenagers, and I was barely out of my teens myself, about 22, when I wrote it. It was just, it was autobiographical, and it was also a book of whatever helpful advice I could offer to kids coming through those teenage years. And I wrote it for two reasons. One was to just answer the letters that were coming in by the thousands, because, you know, I was making lots of records. Now, this was sort of at the ascending peak of my early career, and for some reason, the kids were very anxious to know what my advice was, what my experience was, and the problems that they were going through right then. And I noticed I was being asked a lot of the same questions over and over, so I thought, well, I'll write this as best I can out in book form. And then I was asked to contribute toward the opening of a new Christian college in Philadelphia. So I thought, okay, I'll donate the proceeds of this book, I mean, whatever proceeds there are, if any. So there were two reasons, one to answer the questions and the other to try to perhaps raise some money for this Christian college. And to everybody's astonishment, mine most of all, the book became the number one nonfiction bestseller for 2 years. And there was a lot of money, of course, for the school, and the book went well over a million copies, and I still bump into young people now who were teenagers 15 years ago or more, who say that the book really had some answers for them. So that was a shock. It was a thrill. Then there was a book called Between You, Me, and the Gatepost, which is a similar book, sort of a follow-up book. A book about Christmas called The Real Christmas, and then a book 10 years after the first called The Care and Feeding of Parents. And this was...
That sounds very interesting.
This was a book for the same basic audience that had read Twixt 12 and 20 that I knew would now be in the early stages of their marriages and just starting their families and starting to grapple with this amazing experience of raising your own kids. And I had just come through that phase, or was still in it, but at least we were past the early part. And so I wrote about those experiences, and it was a mild bestseller, but nothing like Twixt 12 and 20. And then I just put the typewriter away and figured, well, that's it, that's all I've got to write. And that was about the time when my own life was starting to crumble. I mean, my marriage, my own family, my career direction, and I was starting very serious problems. And it was because of a spiritual vacuum that had grown up in my own life, and I had to cope with that, because it now seemed like everything that was important to me was about to just fizzle away. And after I came through that very severe time, Shirley and I and the girls, all of us together, well, we knew we really had something else very beautiful to share, and I wrote a new song, which is now, I think it's probably past the sales overall of Twixt 12 and 20 or any other book I've written, and is in, I guess, about 15 languages now. When I was in Japan, I bumped into some people that are about to finish the translation of a new song into Japanese. So I'm really thrilled, because that's also autobiographical, and Shirley's book came soon after that, One Woman's Liberation, and it's both books are the autobiography, really, of our own spiritual journeys. It'd be a little overlapping, but her book, of course, is much more about her own experiences as a young girl and the things that led her to our marriage and then what she had to cope with as a woman through the triumphs and the tragedies. Mine is more my own childhood and then my experiences as an entertainer trying to reconcile the opposite kinds of influences, it seemed, of an entertainer's life and world with ideals and principles and spiritual reality, and the two things just didn't seem to want to mix at all. And that's what led to the, you know, to the split right up the middle of our lives. Anyway, then since then I've written a book called Dr. Balaam's Talking Mule, and this is, it's just recently been retitled and brought out in paperback called My Brother's Keeper. And this is quite a serious book, more serious than anything I'd written. A plea to folks from all the various church backgrounds or anybody who is religious at all or spiritual at all to see that we are brothers, we're meant to be, and that we have something to give to each other. And, you know, Dr. Balaam's Talking Mule is really taken from the 22nd chapter of Numbers, where there was this prophet, the religious man, and he received some instruction from this barnyard animal, the mule, who had no theological credentials at all, but the Holy Spirit had given this mule something to say that was for the prophet's own good, and they teamed up again and went on their way, and they blessed the people of Israel. Well, I know I'm not a prophet or a theologian or a preacher. I identify more with the barnyard animal, the mule, but I did feel that the Holy Spirit had given me something to say. So that has become now My Brother's Keeper, at least in paperback. And so we go on writing. It seems like we're not running out of things to say these days.
One of our listeners called in, and I'm sure they're referring to your music. The question is, how much of your own material do you write?
Well, the books, I do it all. But
sure. I think they're talking probably about the music.
Yeah. The music, I'm just starting, really, to record more songs that I've written, and that's easier when I get into the country field, because the kind of songs that I could write and the way that I would give them expression would fit my own sort of country background more than any other kind. In the past, most of the songs I've ever recorded that were successful were songs I just found someplace else. Either they were sent to me or they were old records by somebody else that I did in a new way, or movie themes that were written for me or something like that. I guess I've never really had a hit with a song that I wrote myself. Well, I take that back. There was a song called Wish You Were Here, Buddy, 2 years ago while the thing in Vietnam was really hot. And I wrote a song out of my own curiosity, really, about how it would feel to be stuck over there in the jungles of Vietnam fighting and hear about maybe an old buddy, high school buddy back home who had refused to go and who was having an equally or at least a very rough time involved in demonstrations trying to stop it from back on this side. And I wonder how he would feel about that. And so I wrote a song that was actually a letter from a guy in Vietnam back to this buddy who had refused to go. And it was sort of a tongue-in-cheek, it was a satirical thing, and I did that in a real country way, and it got to be a sizable hit. It made the top 20 around the country, but there were a lot of stations that wouldn't play it because they thought that it was a pro-Vietnam or pro-war statement. It wasn't that at all. It was a human kind of a statement about two friends. But anyway, that was one song I wrote that got to be a successful one anyway. And I've had a few others. Well, Exodus, I wrote the words for Exodus, and we may do that in Casper too, because I look for excuses to do it. That's a movie theme, and
sure.
And I'm proud of the fact and grateful for the fact that I had the opportunity to write the words for a song that's now the second Jewish national anthem, I guess. But it's more than that. I really think it's a statement of love for country and love for God that any man can make. This land is mine. God gave this land to me. And I think I could really sing it with great conviction in Wyoming, some of the prettiest and most God-blessed country in the world.
And you'll be at the foot of our beautiful Casper Mountain at our T-Bird Gym at Casper College.
I may just have to sing Exodus, yeah.
It'll be tremendous. We're speaking with Pat Boone on the program this morning. If you have a question that we haven't covered, call 234-4545, and our gal will write down the question. There's one here I'm not sure I understand, but I'll toss it out to you anyway. A gentleman called and said, does Pat Boone remember April Lovehorn and something about a racetrack? A car, apparently, he's referring to that you sold to Dick Smothers. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I sure do. I bought a Ferrari when I was in Italy. And I got it with an air horn, and the air horn could be sort of programmed to play anything, so I had it set to play the first few notes of April Love. And I had a lot of fun with it because it was a terrific car, and then I could just punch the horn in traffic or anywhere going by somebody's house, or when I saw somebody that I knew or whatever, I could play April Love. Or when tourists out here would wave at me and driving along, as they often do, I could punch the horn and play them a few notes of April Love, and they'd get a kick out of it. I did eventually sell the car to Dick Smothers. I understand he in turn sold it to Tom, and then Tom sold it again to somebody else, and I forget, I don't know who's got it now, but the funniest thing I remember about it was taking the car down to Palm Springs to play in Bob Hope's golf tournament. It's very hot down there, and I didn't know about an air horn that if you let it sit in the sun a long time, it gets the air inside of it gets inflated. Well, the effect will be the same as if you were sitting in there pushing on the horn, and it'll just play over and over and over again. Well, I had the car parked very close to the clubhouse at one of the courses where they play this Bob Hope Desert Classic. And I was out on about the 15th green, and I could hear this horn blowing way off in the distance. And I could swear it was April Love, but it wasn't exactly April Love. I mean, there were a couple of notes missing. And I kept listening. I teed off on 16, and I played on down the fairway, got on the 16th green closer to the clubhouse, and sure enough, I could tell there were some of the notes of April Love, but not the whole thing, and it was sounding very peculiar. And then I played 17 and 18, and as I got closer and closer to the clubhouse, and man, I was, blocks and blocks away. As I got closer, I could hear it real loud, and now, and I could tell it was April Love, but it was like somebody was standing strangling the horn. And it was just playing a real sort of off-key and a fading but wheezy kind of thing. And I found out as I got in toward 18, when somebody came running out and said, is that your car? And I'm saying, yeah. They said, can you please, if you got the key, can you please get in and shut that thing off? It's driving everybody out of their minds, and the golfers are missing their putts. And everybody's going crazy. And besides, it's been going now for about half an hour. And it seems to be distorting and breaking down, but it's still making all that racket. Well, I don't remember if I even finished playing the hole. And I went to the clubhouse, got the key, and I had to drive out in the desert. I couldn't stop it. The hot air was in there, and there was no way I could stop the horn, and I had to just drive immediately, just kick up a big cloud of dust and left, and went way out in the desert and just sat there with the hood up until things cooled off enough that the horn would stop. And I don't know if it still plays April Love real well now. Because
after that, it might not, huh?
Well, I'd have been hoarse, too, if I'd been shouting at the top of my lungs for that long.
You have had an effect on many, many people's lives, not only through family and religion, but as I think back in the 50s, your white shoes, of course, the white bucks.
Yeah.
Bernadine sweaters.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I still have a Bernadine sweater at home. I may wear that Tuesday night.
Yeah, and get out a pair of those old white bucks with the red soles. Well, I do see them a lot, and those shoes, of course, never wore out. I guess every pair that was ever bought is still around someplace. I've got a pair that's made into a lamp here at home.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, it was one of my original pairs, and I just couldn't throw it away, so we had a lamp stand made, and every time you turn on that lamp, it lights the area of the room, but a shaft of light sort of falls down on this pair of white buck shoes. But I'm seeing more and more people wearing them. Of course, they're making them again now, just
sure.
Like they were before. I mean, the real heavy red soles and the sort of scuffed up white buck. Ray Bolger told my wife recently where he bought a pair down in Newport Beach or something, and she went down and got me a new pair for Christmas. But we're seeing a lot of guys of various ages wearing those white buck shoes again. Frank Sinatra, often when he wears white shoes, tells people they're his Pat Boone booties and stuff like that. So
Pat Boone booties, huh?
Yeah. It was not something I intentionally did. I was just wearing what all other high school and college kids were wearing, you know, in 1955 when I got started. But they became associated with me because I guess I was the first entertainer ever to wear them on television. And, you know, your first impression of somebody is a strong one, usually. And it stays with you. And people were disappointed, from then on. If I wasn't wearing white shoes, that was fine with me because I like them better than the other kind anyway.
Do you have a favorite male singer, male vocalist?
Well, I have a favorite two or three, I guess. Jack Jones just knocked me out. I guess Bing Crosby is my all-time favorite. Because he did everything and does still. I was reading in some big national magazine a couple of days ago where he's singing again. You know, he had that lung operation. And,
mm-hmm.
And yet at the age of 71, 72, he's doing some vocal exercises and he's done an album. And he does it all. I heard him sing Up, Up, and Away, Jim Webb's song once, and he actually recorded it, you know, and it was terrific. Perry Como, I think, is a phenomenon of our day. Here's a fellow that's 62 or 63 years old and still having hit records and doing his television specials and just singing like an Italian angel, you know. I'd say Perry and Bing and Jack Jones are my current favorites. As far as Bing and Perry are concerned, long, long time favorite singers.
What about female vocalists?
Well, Ella Fitzgerald and Barbara Streisand, are just far and away my favorites. Ella was for years. She always did things I felt no other singer, male or female, could do. And then along came Barbara Streisand, and I really think she can do just about anything that Ella can do except sound like Ella.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ella has that rich cello sound in her voice now that can only come from many, many years of experience and singing and all kinds of know-how and living. And Barbra Streisand has not only Ella's technique, but more. But she's still a young woman, and Ella has that richness of sound and experience that, you know, you can't inherit. It can only be grown, you know. But those two, I think, they pointed the market as far as the women are concerned.
Let's see, we've had some listeners call in with questions. One, a comment, saw you in Dallas, Texas, looking forward to seeing you in Casper. Another caller wants to know if you still tour with the Osmonds.
No, we sure would like to have them with us once in a while.
You bet.
Because they're fabulous entertainers, and of course they'll fill most any auditorium or coliseum, you know, by themselves. So there was a time when they were really happy to be part of our shows because it was sort of a break for them. Now I think it'd be more a break for us to be with them.
Well, you'd need a big stadium between the Boones and the Osmonds, I know that.
Yeah, you know, we're going to Cleveland right after Casper for an unusual parlay into a coliseum that does seat 22,000. And we're going to be appearing there with Jerry Lewis and Connie Stevens. And the promoter there has the idea that people would like to see a really big show with at least three major elements. And the way the ticket sales are going, he must be right. It's really looking good. The last performer to appear in that Coliseum in Cleveland was Elvis. He filled it with some 22,000. And now it looks like we may do it too, but of course there are three of us. There's Jerry, Lewis. Of course, I'll have to laugh when that happens. I'm going to remind Connie of a thing that happened at a fair in Milwaukee a number of years ago, and Red Foley was with us. That was quite a package too. That was Red Foley and his son-in-law, Pat Boone, and Connie Stevens. And Connie flew in from somewhere else. It was the fair time of year. We were all doing a lot of fairs and crisscrossing and being in different places every day. And her bags left the airport and went straight to the hotel, but she had to go to the fairgrounds because there was an afternoon show. And when she got out there, she had her costume, but she needed a couple of personal things, including some lingerie. And she had a new young road manager who was sort of scared anyway, his first time out. And she sent him about 30 minutes before showtime out to find her some lingerie, which she needed for the, you know, for her show. And he came back red-faced, and, you know, you can't really find anything like that around a fairground usually, and I don't think he tried too hard. He was just too embarrassed, and now it's about 5 minutes before the show, and she was going to have to go on stage, and she just had to have something, and so I gallantly offered her my jockey shorts. And Connie Stevens went on stage with this beautiful little short dress and all these little ruffled petticoats and my jockey short. And she did a great show, but we were all standing backstage, and my father-in-law, Red Foley, all of us cringing and just waiting to see her sort of forget and get a little too rambunctious out there. And she always was sort of bouncy and perky, you know, in her show. And suddenly, these jockey shorts come filtering down around her ankles. But it didn't happen, and she laughs her head off, as we do whenever we remember it. And I think when I get to Cleveland, I'll have a nice package of fresh jockey shorts for her.
Maybe you should make a lamp out of those, too.
Yes.
Another question. What religion are you?
That's a good question. I and my family are just Christians, and you know, we don't even consider it a religion anymore. It's that word usually means to most people what denomination are you, or what group are you a part of, or you know, what is your doctrinal statement or belief? What is it about your practice of your faith that sets you apart from the rest of us? And that's unfortunate, because that's not what religion is supposed to be, but that's what it often means to people, whether they even think of that or not. So we're just Christians, and we have a relationship with God that Jesus made possible, and we're part of a congregation of believers out here in Los Angeles called Church on the Way, which is a dynamic, growing congregation of people now that's almost 3,000 people. But we're just believers. We're Christians and some of God's kids and young brother and sisters of Jesus and of every other man or woman who believes that Jesus is the Son of God and who worships that one God. We feel ourselves brothers and sisters to that person. So I guess that's the best way I can answer it. We're just Christians.
There's an interesting article, remind the listeners, too, in July Cornet about yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And perhaps they would enjoy reading that. Another question, have you ever sung with Billy Graham?
No, I never have. I've been with Billy on television, and I did take part in a Honor America Day on the 4th of July, 3 or 4 years ago, that went out live on a number, on all three networks from Washington. And I sang and led the Star Spangled Banner at the beginning of the program, and then Billy spoke, but never in one of his own crusades. I'd love to do it. I was asked to do it, years ago before I really experienced my own total commitment. I mean, they just knew I was a church-going guy, and, you know, they ask entertainers who are at least church-going people or who will participate with Billy. But then after a new song came out, and we were telling the world that we had made 100% commitment, and because of that, we had begun to experience some really wonderful, miraculous, supernatural things. Wasn't Billy so much, but the people that work behind the scenes with him and really try to protect his overall image and appeal to, you know, the broad cross-section of the Christian world. They felt like that maybe we'd gone a little too far, and have told me since then that when I wrote a new song that I had cut myself off from you know, ever appearing with Billy Graham, which I regretted, but I could understand, I mean, from their standpoint. And yet, when I was on the Dick Cavett show one time with Billy, I brought an autographed copy of a new song to give to Billy for him and his wife, Ruth. And he said, oh, when I handed the book, he said, oh, we've read this, we've got it. He said, my whole family has read it. And they said, in fact, we have a book-selling organization, and we've sold thousands of copies of this book.
Hmm.
And so I said, well, I hadn't signed one anyway. This is at least from me personally to you. And he took it, you know, quite warmly. And so evidently, it's not Billy's feelings, but just the folks around him that feel like that if you start talking about having experienced miracles and other supernatural things, you're on dangerous ground, and they might lose some support if the Billy Graham organization tended to agree with or support those things. So I understand it, and I just sort of regret not ever having actually been in a witnessing situation with Billy. But I think the time will come, because I know the warm feeling and the great admiration that I have for him, and I think it's mutual, at least to large degree.
We'll remind the listeners again, and we're about ready to wrap up the program, that Pat Boone and family will be in concert next Tuesday night, the 22nd of July, at Thunderbird Gym at Casper College. Two summer concerts, 5:30 p.m. and at 9 p.m. And advance tickets are still on sale, and I'll give you the rundown of the 9 locations here in Casper where you can get your advance tickets. And it looks like it's going to be packed, so I encourage you to get out and get your tickets today or tomorrow. If you wait until Tuesday or wait to go to the door to get a ticket, you may not get in. It's going to be tremendous, and we're looking forward to Pat Boone and family in concert next Tuesday night, T-Bird Gym, 5:30 p.m. and at 9 p.m. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'll be working with you on the sound system.
Good.
You'll be happy to know that all the equipment and the lighting and the staging and everything has been arranged. And
that's good.
Everything is all set.
That's so important. A lot of times it's discouraging to come in and know you have a really good program. People are anxious to hear it. And then there's a breakdown in the sound system that just tends to make everything really difficult and sort of squelch it somewhat. Is it a usual thing to have two shows, 5:30, 9, this kind of thing? I mean, when performers do come in to Casper, is it a usual thing to do two, or is this a little unusual?
This is unusual. And I think that one of the problems we have here in Casper, we don't have a facility with a large seating capacity, anything over 2,500 really. And they anticipated selling many, many more tickets than that. In fact, I think they've sold that many already, advance tickets.
In a way, I'm glad, because although it's exciting on one hand to be in a place that seats 10, 15, 20,000 at one time, that's exciting. Still, you don't get to see or have much contact with the vast majority of the people that are there. And I like to be able to see the faces of the people, and I like to get out into them. And probably in Casper, I'll do what I like to do, which is get involved with the audience and sing some songs together. And that's much easier in a more intimate place. So I think it's going to really be fun. I look forward to doing two shows instead of one.
And we've even located, in Casper, Wyoming, wireless microphones for you.
Hey, that's great. Well, that means I can get right out into the crowd. I like to do that.
Well, we're looking forward to it, and I know what a busy schedule you have, and we've taken an hour of your time this morning, but we've enjoyed it very much. I know our listeners have. And we'll see you next Tuesday in Casper, Wyoming.
Okay, Larry.
Thanks you.
A million.
Have a nice day.
Bye.
Bye. Pat Boone and family.
And that concert will be, of course, at T-Bird Gym, 5:30 and 9, two concerts. Tickets at the Chamber, First National, Les Parsons, Windy City Music, Rocky Mountain Sound, Sunshine Records, Christian Brothers Mobile Homes, God's Window, and at the Faith Bookshop. Advance tickets, just $3. And what a bargain to see this fantastic family, talented family in concert. $3, there'll be five at the door, but I, again, encourage you to get advance tickets. It's going to be a little tough to get the $5 tickets at the door. Pat Boone and family in concert, sponsored by Life Incorporated of Casper. That was a very interesting program, and we thank you for joining us this morning. We hope you've had a good week. Have a nice weekend, drive carefully, and we'll see you Monday morning.
Prepare a fine seed bed and keep your garden weed-free with a John Deere rotary tiller. Lathrop Feed and Equipment has 3 1/2 horsepower tillers and also 6 horsepower models. All of these tillers have bolo tines that mix and mulch thoroughly to a 7-inch depth. And John Deere tillers have a reverse gear. Lets you back away from the tight spots without lifting and turning. That's a John Deere tiller, the best you can buy. Stop in today at Lathrop Feed and Equipment. Don't forget, for the finest seed beds your garden can possibly have, it's John Deere Rotary Tillers from Lathrop Feed and Equipment, 2 miles east of Casper on Yellowstone Highway. Lathrop Feed and Equipment.
This has been Free for All, your morning telephone discussion program. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KATI, its ownership, management, employees, or sponsors.
How would you like to live like a millionaire for practically nothing? Well, you can with the exciting Champagne Suite Weekend Package at the Radisson Denver Hotel in Denver. Any Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, you can have complimentary champagne and a suite of rooms for just $18 a night plus tax. The champagne's bubbly and the suite is luxurious. A spacious living room, a private bar, a connecting bedroom, and an outside balcony with a beautiful view of the mountains. All for only $18 a night and no charge for children when they occupy the same suite. And there's more. You'll have special cash and charge privileges at Denver's Playboy Club right on the 14th floor. You can enjoy entertainment and fine dining in Radisson's famous Flame Room with continental cuisine and elegant flaming entrees prepared right at your table. There's convenience underground parking, and you'll be just 3 blocks from downtown Denver, close to everything. It's all part of the Champagne Suite Weekend for just $18 a night. Reservations must be made in advance, so write or phone now. The Radisson Denver Hotel in Denver and live like a millionaire. And good morning. It's 19 minutes after 10 o'clock. Doc Mueller, Katie, Total News. Two Casper area residents are in fair condition at Natrona County Memorial Hospital after a two-car accident last night. 37-year-old Reyes Davis and 23-year-old Christine Davis, both of 801 Swingle Acres, are being treated for lacerations. The Davises were injured when their car was hit broadside by a car driven by 19-year-old Paul David Tucker of 3340 Brookhaven Drive. Tucker and a passenger in his car, 21-year-old Ronald Gay of 18 Cacti Place, were treated and released. The Highway Patrol says the accident occurred about 10:30 last night on Highway 220 at the Squaw Creek turnoff, about a mile south of town. The patrol says the Tucker vehicle struck the Davis vehicle broadside when the Davis vehicle made a left turn off 220 onto Squaw Creek Road. The patrol says the investigation into the accident is continuing and citations are pending. The FBI is looking for a Tulsa, Oklahoma man who's been indicted for alleged involvement in a huge interstate grain swindle. The Bureau announced today the 28-year-old Ralph James Teener Jr. was charged with interstate transportation of stolen property. Teener was accused of using five counterfeit cashier's checks totaling $30,000 for five truckloads of corn at Ray last May. The FBI says the alleged fraud is similar to other incidents that have occurred throughout the Rocky Mountain